Welcome to the Round 11 Supercoach Coach Podcast. I'm Marcus, and this week I'm joined by Dunny. Welcome back to the show, mate.
Thanks, Marcus. Thanks for having me, and g'day to all the listeners and viewers. Sorry to the viewers who can't see me. It's still technical problems my end, so unfortunately you miss out on seeing me again this week, but good to be back.
Awesome. And we've got Faz back on the show as well. Welcome back, Faz.
G'day, gents. Lovely to be back. And believe us, we did try. It would have been just one frozen image of Dunny the whole time. So depending on what face he pulled, it might be better that we can't see him.
So Faz, I think new format for our intro since you've last joined the show. We do now our favourite score, our least favourite score from the weekend. Doesn't have to be in your team, followed by your rank and your score for the week. So why don't you kick us off? How was round 10 for you?
Round 10 was a bit of a struggle. My final score for the week was 21.95, which doesn't feel horrible, but as you're about to get into, that was well below par this week. So ranks down to 14,000th at the moment. It was down 2,000 spots this week. My trades were Orazio and Powell came out for Dusty and Lockie Jones. Was originally thinking of a double upgrade, but with Jones being available this week, I shifted plans and went for him. Best score, or the score I liked the most, I'll go with my boy Jack McRae, who's really doing a solo effort holding up my midfield. Worst score, I'll go for a two-parter. The worst in my team were the rookies, because I think all of the rookies I had on field scored around the 50 mark, unfortunately. So was all of Jones, RCD, Berry, Warner and Waterman. Had Poulter stashed on the bench, so the only good rookie score I had for the week wasn't on the field. But really the worst one for me was Clayton Oliver, because I'm a non-Clayton Oliver owner. And not only do plenty of teams have Clayton, but a lot of them had him with the V or the C on him this week. And boy, is it hard to play catch up when, well, a lot of people have 400 points coming out of their captain. Dunny, did you have a better week than I did?
Got me just this week, Faz. I ended up with 21.90. I also dropped about 2,000 spots. I'm down to 12,200 at the moment. So a little bit ahead, but not going too badly. Much like yourself, I was going to do a double upgrade this week. Had it locked in all week long. I was going to bring in Ridley for Heath Chapman, who's been sitting there doing nothing. But I ended up pivoting at the last minute and bringing in Lockie Jones. So my thinking was I was going Chris Burgess, who's really been doing nothing. Jones was going to go up in value. Burgess was going to go down. And in the end, I didn't think Ridley was going to move too much, which he didn't. So to me, the value of the timing of the trade is just so important, because you don't want to be leaving it a week late just to get that premium player. I think this year, more than others, we've got to grab that rookie price player and that cash generation whenever we can, because it's just so hard to make money this year. My favorite score of the week is an old friend of mine from this show. We've talked about him a number of times, Zach Williams, finally ripping out a decent score for me with 124. But my least favorite on the ground was Scott from the Bulldogs with his 18. Like Faz, I had Poulter sitting on the bench. I also had Burns from St Kilda sitting on the bench. Both of those guys outscored the three mid-rookies I had on field in Jordan Scott and Collier Dawkins. Unfortunately, I had no way to loop any of them. But all in all, not a bad round. I think, you know, I've got plenty of cash. I've got 400 grand in the bank now, thanks to a double downgrade the week before. Looking to do some serious upgrading this week. Marcus, let us have it. How did it go?
I had a ripper. 25-14, round rank of 119th. A few smaller scores on the Sunday, but I was actually in potential contention for some cash, but no Bulldogs players certainly ruled me out of contention on Sunday. Favorite score was Clayton Oliver, doubled his score at 408 as my captain, which was awesome. Or actually, Fantasia was my captain for the week, riding Oliver on the VC. So that was great. That's 2 weeks in a row as my vice captain or captain. So Clayton's doing some serious heavy lifting for the team. Least favourite scores, probably McRae's 149, because I don't have him. Bontempelli wouldn't be far up behind at 159, but I think both those players are in fair chunk of teams. I think 30% for Bont and 48% for McRae. So when they score well, it certainly hurts my team, but they've been killing it all year, and it's a matter of time until I hopefully bring them in at this rate. I cannot afford to run my Tonga without that sort of firepower. The team has now moved up into the top 2,500. So for any listeners feeling down in the dumps, 5 weeks ago, I was at 26,000 and I've had five consecutive weeks of moving up, 18,000, 10,000, 7,000, 5,000, and now in the top 2,500. So don't lose hope. The season is long and there's plenty of time to turn things around. All of a sudden, my score isn't looking too awful. I'm only, I think, 300 points off being in the top K or in triple digits. So exciting times for the team. Hopefully it can keep that sort of momentum up. My trading cadence is pretty good. So this week, if I trade out Jordan for a premium, Flynn's my only rookie left on field. So I think that's driving most of my good scoring, even though I've still got a few sort of not so great players like Fantasia kicking around. All right, why don't we go for a quick league update or our group update before we crack on to some questions. And this week, I think a lot of the questions around potential downgrade options. Highest score for the week in our Patreon wasn't actually myself. It was Adam's team, Your Simkin the Best, which was, that's a great name, 2575 for the team, round rank of seventh, and moved up into 357th overall. So that's really awesome to see. The leader of the Patreon group, so the current front runner for the cash prize at the end of the year for our patrons, is Zach's team's Patterns Generals. So I think he had slipped down a little bit and Travis's team, Styling and Profiling, took the lead, but now Zach's back on top at 323rd. So Adams, Your Simkin the Best, is hot on his tails at only 15 points less. So very tight up the top of the Patreon group. Okay, so that wraps up our score updates. Let's get into some questions for the week. So no real big injuries to have a chat about or suspensions, which is nice for a change this week. And we get to spend that time instead talking a little bit around buy planning, a bit of strategy around that. Cody Waitman and James Madden probably headline the week's show, being two potentially tempting downgrade options for the week. And then we're going to have a little stab at some potential trade-in options for those of you who are looking to maintain your upgrades. But before we get into specific players, we'll start with this question from Stephen Ben, one of our Patreons. Given that anyone we bring in this week will be missing a game due to the bye, is it worth looking at a double down this week to build bank for bye trading? Or is it more of a priority to maintain upgrade cadence? So start off with a little bit of buy strategy. So we haven't talked a heap about that this year, mostly because we've been preoccupied with struggling to find value, dealing with a heap of injuries, etc. Buy planning has certainly been left to a bit more of an afterthought. We've covered it a little bit more on the Patreon shows, but certainly on the main show, we haven't had a heap of time to discuss it. Faz, do you have any initial thoughts around Stephen's question and how to approach whether or not we should be upgrading this week?
Yes, I think it doesn't hurt to be going into the buys with a bit of cash in bank. That will certainly, you know, ease your situation. But in saying that, I think particularly after the last few weeks, there was 2 weeks ago when, you know, it was RCD, Poulter and Burns were all on the bubble at the same time. I think a lot of people did a double downgrade at that point. And then with Jones coming back for game three last week, again, people would have probably done a downgrade last week. I'm not sure that you want to be holding that much cash for that long. And while you can deploy that over the buys, I think that there's probably more value in getting some points on field right now. So what I'd probably personally be doing this week is looking to still do an upgrade, but just with the buys very much in mind. Even though I know that I'm trading them in, they're going to be missing a game in 2 weeks' time. That's not really factoring into my decision-making too much, given that anyone I pick will be missing a game sometime in the next 4 weeks. It's just about which game are they missing that's the best for my team structure. Yeah, if you didn't have any cash in bank, I don't hate the idea of a double down. If you've already got cash, though, I think I'd be a bit hesitant to be double downing and having so much cash held and money not deployed on field.
Yeah, I agree very much with what Faz was saying. Definitely look at the buy structure that you have. I'm struggling a bit in round 13, so I may even reevaluate bringing Jordan Ridley in this week and see if there's someone else who meets my structure just a little bit better at this stage. But you certainly need to keep it in mind this week. Whoever you bring in, they are going to miss a game in the next 3 weeks. But I think, you know, we still should keep that upgrade cadence going and still be looking to do at least one upgrade this week.
I reckon a lot of buy strategy should really be centered around bringing in buy-free premiums after the first buy round. Mm. So before round 13 or after round 12, when the first class of premiums have played, ideally you want to be going at least one upgrade, but potentially even two upgrades and one downgrade that following week. And just in terms of finishing your teams, that's when you want to be targeting the completion of your teams, is picking through those buy-free premiums. And so if you extrapolate backwards from that, if the ideal world is seeing you bring in a couple of premiums buy-free after the first buy round, then next week's trading period, which is before the first buy, is really about building bank, right? Because whoever you bring in next week, they're all going to have a buy upcoming. So it's not hugely beneficial to spend your money next week upgrading. It's really more about next week building bank. Now, if you extend that further into this week, that means depending on how much cash in bank, if you already have too much that you're not going to spend next week anyway, then you actually want to deploy some cash this week, because at least you get the score on ground this week and you're still going to have cash in bank for that pre-round 13 buy trade period. If you keep 700,000, 800,000 this week, and ideally, you don't want to trade it next week because you want to bring in the buy-free premiums in pre-round 13, then you're holding a lot of cash for a couple of weeks. So really, the reminder every time we hit sort of one round out from the buys is that this week is still an upgrade week. So if you have cash in bank, definitely try and put it to work. The only caveat to that is, if you're worried about downgrade options coming up, you may not use all the cash in bank. You might try and keep a little bit in kitty. So if you have James Jordan and Anthony Scott, I think those two are probably two of the most popular trade out options this week, but the rest of your bench is super, super thin, such that you may not have a great downgrade candidate next week anyway, you may think about double downgrading this week, because next week you might not have rookies to trade out to build bank for that pre-round 13 buy period. I know I'm certainly in that situation. Once I tap out Anthony Scott and I tap out James Jordan, the rest of my bench is so thin. I've got Lockie Jones, Tom Highmore, Brockman still sitting around. Treacy's going to be still hanging around. I've got Fullerton. Like, RCD and Poulter are my only two rookies that I might be thinking about trading out. And even then, I might want to hold them for a couple more weeks yet. And that may be another reason to not upgrade this week and to build bank, is if you're not sure that you'll continue to have enough cash generation from rookie downgrades to fund that post round 12 buy upgrade period.
I think that's a good point you raised, though, about, you said it, I think, earlier in the show, we've been struggling for cash generation all year. And I think plotting out your trades as much as possible, I know that things will come up. There could be injury suspensions, players being dropped that we haven't accounted for, but I think you want to have a good idea of, you know, what are the moves you're going to make over the buys. And if that means you have to take a somewhat compromised pick right now, that may be better for your team in the long run. You know, you might be sacrificing a few points on ground by going mid 500s player rather than going right up to 600,000, even if you've got the money for a player right at that cost. But if it means that you've, you know, planned out your trades better, you can pretty quickly make up any points difference there.
I think you guys have covered pretty much everything we needed to cover there. The only thing I'd probably just remind everyone is, when you're using your buy planner, it might say, hey, you've got, you know, 19 or 20 players playing in this round. Just remember, that's only counting players whose team is playing, not whether they're playing. So if you've got guys like Brockman or Fullerton or Highmore who potentially may not play sitting on your bench, just remember that they won't be there, and count the guys who are only actually going to play. And, you know, just for the new players, remember that it's only the players on field, not the ones sitting on the bench, that count in your best 18. So just a couple of rookie things there for newer listeners of the show.
Yeah, certainly good to remind people of that. If you haven't been listening to our show for a while, we may be overloading on strategy. So the foundations are definitely important to remind on. And I guess alongside with that is also how you split your premiums. So last week, off the back of Fitzroy Gorilla's glorious win, went on the Supercoach pod on the Herald Sun. And one of the things they talked about or asked about was sort of how you should think about splitting up your buy players across the 3 weeks. And I definitely recommended having a bit of a look at your premiums and how you split those up across the 3 bye weeks. If you imagine you've got 6 players up, back, and down forward, if they're all premiums, ideally you want 2 of them missing each week that you can hide on the bench. So that's the goal that you should be shooting for is, if I don't have 2 premiums on the bench in a certain round by a certain position, that's where I should be targeting an upgrade. So last week I bought in Christian Petrarca. Now, he's potentially not the best trade-in candidate, but I only had 1 round 14 by premium in the midfields, being Oliver. So his price point together was with his buy was attractive enough that I went, well, he helps contribute to a good spread of premiums that are off each week. In your midfield, obviously, it's more of a 3-3-2 situation. And with most people having Gorn and Grundy out in the rucks in round 14, you probably want 2 missing in round 14 in your midfield, and then 3 and 3 in rounds 12 and 13, if that's all, at all possible. Now, not everyone's going to have their teams finished, so you're not exactly dealing with a full sort of 6 premiums that you're spreading out that way. But it's certainly a good rule to think about how you spread out your risk across the buys, because you may have 18 players playing, but if 9 are rookies, your score could be really, really poor. Ideally, what you want to have is, you know, 14, 16 premiums playing each week, with the last 2 or 3 spots each week filled by rookies, so that your poorest scores, your poorest rookie scores can get culled and can get topped up by good scores. You don't really ever want to be in a situation where you've got more than 18 premiums somehow playing 1 week, because you're leaving a premium on bench. And, you know, there's probably going to be a couple of rookie scores that are all right that you don't mind taking as well. So that's definitely something to keep in mind, is your spread of premium risk across your buys is actually reasonably important, outside of, like Dunny said, also having a look at the players that may be off on the buys, but off the rest of the time as well. And Tyler Brockman, I'm certainly looking at you, hoping you're going to get some games, because you might have to factor in donuts there. All right, that's quite a bit of time spent on buy strategy and planning. So let's talk about some rookies now. The first question here is from JB. Is it time for Jordan to be upgraded after a poor score? Now, Jordan's had poor scores previously, but probably the most unnerving thing about Jordan's latest score is that it came off the back of lower game time, I think under 60%, and less centre bounce attendances, which also coincides with James Harms coming into the team and Jack Viney to return as well. His break even this week is still reasonable. It's only 75. So even if he scores 60 or another 50, he's not going to go down too low. So it's potentially not the worst idea to hold him for 1 week longer. But if you are concerned that James Harms will continue to take midfield time, which I suggest he probably will, and you're concerned about the fact that they're playing the Bulldogs this week and there might be more contention for midfield scores, James Jordan might not be the worst trade out option this week. 366,000 could be his peak price point, although, you know, he has beat that break even, I think, in about 2/3 of his games so far this year. So he tends to go big and small. Most of his scores are 76 plus, all except for 3, which are 49 and below. So he's either fairly hot or fairly cold, and it has correlated with a little bit of the foot off the accelerator in terms of giving him some rest as a young player. So something to keep in mind. I'm certainly considering trading Jordan out this week, although I may keep him depending on how team sheets shake out. Faz, are you looking at trading Jordan out this week, or are you thinking about keeping? He's got around 14 buy, so you could hold him for a while longer.
I wish I had that option. That's one of my other big mistakes for this year, was Dom Tyson over Jordan. Was weighing those two up at the start of the year, and boy, how that one's turned out. If I was in that position, though, I think this is probably the week I'd be looking at moving Jordan on. 366K, that's a really great price for a rookie to get up to. And while the break-even's not horrible this week, unfortunately that poor score from the weekend will be sitting in his price cycles for the next few weeks. So he'd really have to come out and have a belter this week to to undo the work that that 40 will do leading up to the bye. And I would be a bit concerned. Harms seems to be taking a few of the midfield minutes, and I believe Jack Viney's due back potentially next round or maybe the week after. So I think I'd have concerns there that the big scores that Jordan's put out might be coming to a close. He's also playing his first year of AFL footy, so the body might be tiring a little bit. Seems like they're sort of managing him through the games rather than giving him a week off to rest. But with a rookie at such a good high price, I think that, as we've seen with a Tom Powell type, you sometimes just want to get off them when they're right at their peak. I think you'd feel pretty bad if he was coming back around the 300K price when you were trading him out. So certainly not the highest priority to get rid of. I don't think it's a must sell this week, but I'd be pretty tempted if I was in those position.
Why don't we move to the next question from Ben Hackenberg, one of our patrons, asking about whether or not Waitman is a must have potentially as a replacement for Jordan, or is he too expensive considering most of the rookies are not making enough cash? So Waitman earlier in the season would probably be pretty hard to pass off, even at the high price point, because most of us are still fielding rookies. But especially considering most of us are trying to push rookies off field, is $175,000 too much to pay, even if he's played brilliantly and scored a high 90 game on the weekend? Dunny, what do you reckon about Cody Waitman, and are you likely to take a risk on him?
Yeah, he's one that sort of slipped under the radar a little bit, I think, in that, you know, with all those other big names at the Bulldogs, he didn't really jump out at me until this week's score. And I must admit, I didn't notice him against Port, but then I had other issues that night trying to cheer Port onto a victory. But yeah, a 75 and a 98, certainly two very good scores that we have to really sit up and take attention of. You're right, the $173,700 price tag is probably the thing that will put a lot of coaches off. You know, we like to pick up our rookies at bargain basement, and if you compare him to the other rookies that we'd normally pick up, he's already got 50K priced in. So, you know, he needs to have that higher scoring bracket, if you like, to continue on. So he's got a break even of negative 70. So he's definitely going to go up, but he's going to need to maintain those really big scores, I think, to keep that going. You probably discount a little bit of that scoring against St Kilda. I don't think there was a great deal of opposition in that game. So there was a lot of free-flowing ball. I looked at his next run. He's got Melbourne at Marvel this week, which, yeah, obviously a pretty tough game. Then he travels to Optus Stadium for Frio, Cadinia Park for the Cats, and Optus Stadium for West Coast. So that's a reasonably tough run there with those 3 weeks, with two trips to Perth and a trip down to Geelong. So is he a must-have? Probably not. I think you're right. I think earlier in the season we may have looked at him, but just as we're starting to struggle for cash, do we take the punt on him or not? And the other thing which I'm going to throw back to you guys, because I'm not entirely sure of, because I haven't looked at him enough, is his job security there? Are there dogs coming back from injury that are going to take his position?
Yeah, I mean, at the moment, he is playing such brilliant football. I am not sure he gets pulled out. Like, he...
Yeah.
We got a few questions around his job security, and I think if you look at, obviously, the Bulldogs list, you'd go, well, certainly his spot's at risk, right? And
yeah.
Then you consider, well, Scott and McNeil, you know, we had some doubts about them, but when they got a run, Bevo seemed to hold confidence in him. And Waitman is just playing such a unique role for that forward line. There's no other, you know, small to medium forward that plays the game like him at the Bulldogs at the moment. It's hard to see him being dropped except for form.
Yeah.
And certainly form could be a challenge, but he is a high draft pick. He's come out after waiting a little bit, apparently, and performed really, really well. The way he presents up at the ball, his leading patterns, he's a young, eager tackler as well. I don't know, Faz, what do you reckon about Waitman? Could you see yourself paying a bit more for him?
I am tempted. I think you brought up a good point that we're trying to push rookies off field right now, but over the next few weeks as we head into the buys, you know, that's the time when we probably still will be relying on a few rookie scores. So even if they're not the 98 from the weekend, but if he can pump out a couple more 80s, it could be quite important if you're struggling for numbers, or comparing that to, you know, the 18s or whatever that Scott put out this week. I think, yeah, it's a tough one with that job security side of things. If he keeps playing like this, I think there's not really any risk. As you mentioned, he's a first round draft pick, so you think they'd put a few games into him. Mitch Wallace is probably the one that I'm a bit worried about, that he was pushed out of the side earlier in the year. So it could be a risk that Mitch keeps performing at VFL level, he could push him out. It's a pretty convincing case to bring him in with that sort of, you know, scoring potential.
Just to throw a couple other bits in, he did play three games last year, so he's not an absolute rookie. He played Port for 20 points, Gold Coast for 14, but Essendon for 63. You know, it's not like it's his first two games. He's had a little bit of experience as well, so that's obviously why he's got that elevated price. That 63 would have done that to him.
I think it just depends on where your team sits. If you're struggling to upgrade and you need to hit your lowest price rookie in order to keep upgrading, then obviously you rule him out. If you've got a more completed team and your rookie's less valuable, obviously you rule him out. But I can see a lot of teams finding Cody Waitman quite a godsend at this stage of the season. 98 in round two is exactly where you want. Stays in his price cycle for another 2 weeks. Certainly something to consider depending on, you know, how flush you are with trades and what you need from a rookie at this stage of the season. The other option that we have is James Madden. And we got a question from Fozzie Lupone on Facebook about Waitman versus Madden. And I know Madden certainly is going to attract a fair amount of suitors as well. He's a def forward, a DPP player, which is certainly exciting for me as a Fantasia owner. But that flexibility with DPP is great just because when you're trading, it also opens up potential pivots and opens up your flexibility when you trade. 78 was his second game. He played round 7 against Port Adelaide, scoring 47, had a couple weeks off, and is back with a round 10 game against Richmond, scoring 78. Probably need to think about his job security, I guess. Probably is in for Ryan Lester, but once he comes back in another couple of weeks, there's a chance that his spot is at risk. He's come in before for an injury and then went out, obviously, the week after. Obviously looks pretty ready for AFL, broke the combine record for sprints, plays down on the half back for Brisbane at the moment, and that bottom price tag, probably enough just to make him a pretty decent option at this stage of the year. Around 13 buy player. Faz, what do you reckon about Madden? Is he likely to make your team this week, and how do you compare him to Waitman?
Also pretty tempted by Madden, price being a big factor there. I think the other guy that he might be in the team for is Darcy Gardner. I think that Darcy Gardner had a smaller injury, which was when he came in for his first game. So he seems to have traded places with Gardner so far this year. And Gardner's done a long one. He's on the injury list with a shoulder for 12 to 14 weeks. I don't see his scoring potential as being as high as Waitman's. So if it's not going to compromise the other end of the spectrum for you and you can still do the upgrade, Waitman's probably the one I'd lean towards just because I think he's got the highest scoring potential. And given that they have the same buys, evens out there. But if you're desperate for cash, certainly beggars can't be choosers, I guess, at that point, because it's pretty much Madden and not a lot else. I think the only other option this week would be Tom Wilson from Collingwood, who's a forward, but he's scored 19 and 45 so far. So Madden's beaten that in both his games. So that'd be where I'd be leaning if I needed the cash.
Dunny, I know you were pretty hot on Madden, and you were saying he's more likely to make your team than Waitman. So you may want to pump up his tyres a little bit, mate.
Yeah, look, absolutely, Marcus. I think for me, the extra 50K that you've got to do other trades by going down to Madden rather than down to Waitman may or may not help you this week. But I know when you get down to 4, 3, and 2 trades left towards the end of the season, you're always like, oh, if only I had another $5,000 or another 20 grand to pick up that extra guy rather than having to settle for someone a bit less. And I think for me, that's where I would probably use Madden as my downgrade target this week, despite the fact that Waitman could score a little better. You're only going to really use Waitman's scores, or Madden's scores for that matter, hopefully for only 2 weeks of the season, being the 2 weeks of the bye where they're going to come onto the field. So, you know, if you can put up with maybe a 20-point drop or a 30-point drop each week in that scoring, it's 40 to 60 points. But that allows you to pick up 50 grand more expensive, better premium should pay off for you in the long run. So having said that, certainly no objection with anyone bringing in Waitman. I think he's a good backup player and he's probably, as Faz said, got the better scoring potential. But for me, I think something I'm focusing on this year is really trying to use a little bit more sensibility than I normally do with my trades and maximize the cash, because it's just so hard to make money this year. And we've got a few dud rookies sitting on the bench that we may end up having to side swap for very little cash anyway. So that's the way I'll be heading, and that's why Madden, I guess, is more valuable to my side than Waitman.
And I think Jai Farah is another example of a option that was available pretty recently that people thought looked pretty good from a scoring point of view, but we probably weren't as keen on for downgrading and extracting value point of view. So, yeah, I think Madden, with his DPP and his lower price tag, has to be number one this week. I think I probably should just mention that Treacy also played another game on the weekend. So he's still at 111K, but he has ruck forward flexibility, which may be relevant. He probably showed enough in round 10 to continue getting games. And then you add the fact that Matt Taberner had an injury on the weekend. It probably bodes reasonably well for his job security. He contests really well. He's a big boy. He tackles. He looks good in the games. He's just not converting any of that physical dominance to any scoring or proper possession. But should just flag that he's available as well. If anybody's looking for a forward or ruck downgrade, I think a decent score is somewhere around the corner. All right, a quick one on the potential trade-ins for the week. Michael Nan on Facebook asked whether or not it's too early to get Whitfield. Should note, though, that he is a round 12 buy player. So when we talked previously around pre-round 13 being the ideal time for an upgrade, Lockie Whitfield certainly slides into that camp. Whitfield scored coaches' votes on the weekend with a game of 110 Supercoach points against West Coast. Since returning, his scores have been 83, 74, and 80. So his price is now under 500K at 498.7K. His break-even is still 107 for the week. So even if you don't pick him up against Brisbane, you can pick him up by free and he'll be pretty ready to go. But if you are not well-stocked for round 12 by backline premiums this week, there's nothing wrong with bringing him in this week, even though he might drop, you know, 5 to 10K, depending if he scores in the 90s against Brisbane. Is there anybody else that you gents want to call out in terms of top trade-in targets for the week? Faz, I might put you under the gun first.
It's probably between two midfielders for me at the moment, which is Tom Mitchell at Hawthorn, who's had a very up-and-down season, a couple of 140s in the last 3 weeks, but a 70 in the middle to keep that price manageable. He's at about 550K. And at a similar price, we have Josh Kelly, 550K, scored 102 on the weekend. Bryce gave us a sneak peek of his centre bounce spreadsheets for this week, and I think the numbers for Kelly are trending in the right direction. Hasn't really translated into the huge scores just yet, but you know, we know what he's capable of with some of his scores in the past. Yeah, Kelly is probably the front runner for me at the moment, with Mitchell not far behind.
Yeah, the only one I'll throw out there is Ridley, for those people who are looking for someone who's on their buy in round 13.
Yeah, I like the Ridley selection. 105, 105, his last two scores. His break-even is 79, so well and truly bottoming out this week. I'm going to throw out Isaac Heaney as well. His 19 cycles out of his price movement, meaning his last two scores of 110 and 86 give him a break-even of 11 at 347,000. Obviously comes with some injury risk, but is playing that half-forward role that we like. So I was watching him extra close after bringing him in on the weekend. And when the ball moves further downfield and their forward is pressed up, he does get in and around some of those clearance situations in the midfield on the half-forward line. I think that he's obviously got a fair bit of value in him, although he presents some injury risk. Christian Petrarca is another guy that I think I should call out. I brought him in last week as well, round 14 by player, so will be a little bit painful for some, but break even of 96. He's 87 and 78 moving out of his price cycle. I would suggest that his current average of 105 is low for where he may be at the end of the year, but obviously comes at some risk because his turnovers have increased as his disposal count has gone up. But at 525 with a low break even, this week is a decent week to pounce. Jack Steele's another one, 563,000. He dropped another 6K. His break even still 120 because he hasn't had particularly huge games, but just to call him out that he's still at a pretty good price point for somebody who's averaging 112. May not look as dominant in terms of his high-end scoring compared to last year, where scaling seems to have helped him out a little bit more, but you think that 110 is still reasonably safe for Jack, and that price point is all right considering that.
If you're hunting the value, Adam Chera from Fremantle, he is at 408,000, had an injury-affected game earlier in the season where he only scored 15, missed a few weeks following that one, so his price has come right down. Scores have been pretty decent this year. He started the year with 3 scores above 120 in his first 4, and since returning from injury, it's been 88 and 102. Certainly don't think he's right up there. You know, even taking out the injury game, he's not going to be a top 8 style mid. I'd say his ceiling is probably being about 105 average, but at $400,000, that I think he's certainly going to score much better than his current price. And if you're in a situation where you just had too many of the rookies that haven't gone up in value and you just need to hunt some value elsewhere, I think you could do worse than Adam Chera.
I'm going to finish off with the last one, and this is just for Dunny. 27 is what Zach Williams scored in round 8 against the Dogs. He's since moved to the back line and scored 85 and then 124. Woo-hoo. They've moved Doherty onto the wing for 2 rounds now, and Bolton likes that that's where he is playing. So Doherty actually looks potentially a little bit more risky because the wing can stifle points, especially compared to the back line these days. But Zach Williams at 400K, this may well be his bottom. He's averaged 100 before, been in the top 6 defenders before. Obviously, injury risk is there. Role consistency is still around because they're asking whether he should be moving into the midfield. But at under 400K, I don't think you could stuff that one up too badly if you were looking for a value selection.
Yeah, break even at 29, just going to burn me because everyone's going to bring him in cheap. And awesome.
I think people are preoccupied, Dunny, so you might get away with that one.
Hopefully we can slide that one under. Yeah, I pity anyone who has to bring him in this week because they can suffer the same pain I have been.
Awesome. Well, it's been great to have you gents on for another show. I think we might wrap it there. And any final thoughts, Faz, to sign off for the week?
I just want to give you a shout-out for your stellar performance on the official Supercoach pod this week. I think you did a great job of translating some of the strategy that we talk about on this show and getting it out to, I was going to say the masses. I think we have a similar audience to the official pod, but getting it out to a new audience did really well. I just realized we've been saying it wrong. We're not actually playing Supercoach. We're playing KFC Supercoach. So I'll try and make sure I get that right in future.
Yeah, that's right. We're going to make sure we get the sponsor in. Maybe that'll get us a little bit more mainstream media our way, Faz. No, I agree. I think it was an outstanding performance, Marcus. You made a lot of sense, and I think you taught a few of those guys a few things as well, which was really good. So well done, mate.
Thanks, guys. And don't forget, our listeners, you're getting the best stuff here, so stay on. Thank you all for supporting us. We've reached the half point of the season almost with round 11 coming around, and then we're heading into the buys. So very challenging week. All the best for your trades. And if you're looking for additional content, patreon.com/supercoach is where we're going to record some bonus material, and we'll sign off for another week. See ya.
See
ya,
everyone.
Bye. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy.